morning, everyone. You're listening to RBN Live, and this is Dr. Nick Begich, and today's program, Changing the Way We See the World, a program on technologies and the impacts of technologies in the 21st century. I'm glad everybody's with me again today. We're here every week, every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., talking about what's going on in new technologies. You know, I've done a lot of the programs on my own and trying to get used to this medium from this side of the microphone. You know, it's been a guest on a lot of programs over the years, and being a host and being able to talk about whatever we want to talk about today is really a nice thing because it gives us a chance to address what's current in the news right up to the moment. And I try and do that with these programs. A lot of people call in, send me a lot of material over the course of the week, and we try and integrate that wherever we can and where it makes sense for this program. So keep doing that. You can find out where to get hold of us at the RBN.com website, so please do that. Again, just a little bit of background on me for those that don't know me. I am Executive Director of Allais Institute on Technology, which is a Texas-based nonprofit corporation. It was set up for those in Texas by one of the family members of Herman Lay, who founded Lay Potato Chips and Frito-Lay, not the notorious Lay family that has made so much news lately, but one that has had a long history of good work, and certainly in Texas, and they're supporting our research efforts at this point in time. I'm the son of a congressman from Alaska. I have a lot of political background here in Alaska. Dad was in the U.S. Congress and the state Senate. My brother Mark is active politically here as mayor of Anchorage. I was past president twice of the Alaska Federation of Teachers and the Anchorage Council of Education. I have a doctorate in traditional and complementary medicine and have worked primarily in science-related areas and disclosing technologies over the last 10 years. My company, Earth Pulse Press, can be located at earthpulse.com, and I would recommend people take a look there. Lots of articles, upcoming lecture venues. We'll be speaking this coming weekend in San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be in Santa Fe later in the month, speaking there, for doing a workshop for 3 hours and a lecture. And then later in Sudbury, Ontario, we'll be speaking in November. And next year in L.A., we're set up for February and May. So we're getting around the country a little bit, trying to get the word out on where these technologies are going. Today, I want to get back into this issue of oil and gas again, because as we're getting closer to winter and the summer is closing, you know, people are concerned about what's going on in that area. And, you know, major oil and gas field has been discovered in the Gulf of Mexico. It's been making news the last day or so. It may, in fact, rival Prudhoe Bay as a source for oil. That's the large oil field here in Alaska that was found back in the late 1960s and has been producing a major portion of domestic oil production. In fact, probably the biggest field in the United States now producing oil domestically. Off the Gulf of Mexico, in the Gulf of Mexico, 3 to 15 billion in an initial announcement is pretty significant, and I'll explain why. You know, back when you first do delineation wells, those wells that sort of separate and sort out how big a field is, you drill a series of these wells, and they give you a pretty good indicator of what's under the ground, and you mix that data with your seismic data, giving you your oil field profiles. Usually there's a fraction. The initial discovery and the initial announcements represent a fraction of what is there. In the case of Prudhoe Bay in Alaska, when they were auctioning the oil rights and preparing the pipeline, they had anticipated only 1 billion barrels of oil, and we passed the 13 billion mark in production some time ago. So these numbers were probably understated. There's probably quite a bit more there. And right after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about that. This is Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World on RBN Live. And you can call in today, and we'll give the number right after the break and get involved in this conversation on energy and oil and gas. Stand by. Be right back. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting System, and you can catch us on shortwave at 12.180 or 5.050. And Republic Broadcasting System has provided this time an opportunity for me to talk about these issues. We appreciate that, and we appreciate your support of the network. It keeps these programs alive and going and gets the information out. We think that's an important function. We give our time, and they provide us the opportunity. So please do support this network and continue to support this network as it moves forward in its mission of getting the truth out. You know, talking about oil and gas right before the break, I want to mention a couple of things that have happened historically. You know, there's been a lot of discussion in the news lately, and it's kind of come and gone, about the fact that British Petroleum, which is one of the major players in Alaskan oil and gas, had to shut down a major portion of its oil field. Now, there's some really important aspects of this. The Congress is making an investigation. There were whistleblowers over 4 years ago complaining about the corrosion of North Slope pipes and needing those pipes to be upgraded and repaired. It was ignored. This is not the first time. You know, back in the 90s, there was a major controversy with Alyeska Pipeline, which is the consortium of oil producers that own the pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, which is about 700 miles long. That pipeline is what delivers presently at capacity that they've been running up until the shutdown, about up to a million two barrels of oil a day. It's actually designed to handle 2 million barrels, but that flow is constrained. Right now it's running less than 800,000 barrels a day because of these shutdowns. Now, they've been inspecting the fields. The fact is whistleblowers were on the scene long ago. If you go back to the 90s when Alyeska got in trouble, a guy named Hamill became the point person for those that worked for the oil industry that were trying to tell the story because they saw lots of risk and inattention. What happened is the oil industry actually set up a false company, a fake front, an environmentally oriented company that then tried to get close to Hamill, and it was actually run by a security firm called Wackenhut, which many of us know from other controversies. They seem to be the one you call on when you need someone to do this kind of work. Wackenhut was in trouble. The oil industry was in trouble. Hamill went to court, and he sued, and he won. In fact, he won, and the judge at the time that he was rendering the ruling, this is what he said. He said, and I quote, "This is not Nazi Germany or Russia, Spork in charge. These people have certain rights," the judge said, referring to Hamill and his wife, Kathleen. What was going on was they were going through their garbage. They were setting them up for not a sting operation, but trying to find out who those whistleblowers are so they could retaliate against those employees. Now, a lot of time has passed since the early 90s. In fact, the most interesting thing in our daily newspaper today here in Anchorage was that British Petroleum just hired that judge, as that retired judge who made those statements, as their ombudsman, as a person that is going to be supposedly a neutral person within the company that employees can go to, so they quit going outside the company to guys like Hamill, who now maintains an office in Washington, D.C., is sort of a focal point for whistleblowers in the oil industry, where states are maybe being ripped off on their royalties because meters aren't working right, or there's environmental issues that are serious issues that cause oil pipelines to shut down for months at a time unscheduled, like what we're experiencing right now. These are not just environmental issues. These are national security issues when our oil flows can be constrained by lack of attention. And whistleblowers, you know, do play a role to make sure that things are accountable, but the mechanisms have to be there. Now, time will tell. Hopefully this judge is one with the depth of integrity. Certainly he was had the depth of integrity to rule properly in that case. Let's hope that he does the right job and provides opportunities for employees to bring issues forward and get problems resolved. More importantly, those kinds of whistleblower institutions need to be considered in a much, much broader sense. But there's more to oil and gas going on in the country right now. And here from the top of the world and the top of the country, I can tell you, as the leading oil-producing state, much is happening here. Now, there was a little bit of news hit the boards a few weeks ago when we ran our primary for the office of governor here in Alaska. And there was a little bit of news blip because our incumbent governor, Frank Murkowski, who was also a U.S. senator for over 20 years, just before he became governor. Now, when he became governor, Alaska had a real quirky bit in our law where we allowed the new governor, if there was a vacancy in the Senate midterm, they could appoint a U.S. senator. And so Frank Murkowski decided it was a good idea to appoint his daughter to maintain his succession, I guess. The way he saw it, he forgot that he was in a democracy and not a monarchy. But anyway, he appointed his daughter to the U.S. Senate. Lisa then ran her first campaign the last time around, and she did win, and she won fair and square, so she is a fair and square elected senator at the moment, and actually, I think a lot more on the ball than her dad when he was in the Senate. And, you know, the Senate is a strange place. You know, when Frank made the Senate, the last election he lost before he lost this one, he lost to my dad back in the early 70s when my dad was running against him for the United States Congress, and my dad won and became congressman for Alaska. We only have one congressman, although we had two senators. Frank then later made his way into the U.S. Senate. Well, he was beaten, not because of the appointment. You know, that's what made all the national news. People heard about this. Oh, he appointed his daughter. People were mad. Yeah, people were mad about that here. But that wasn't the half of it. That was what made good national news. But the real story here in Alaska was over oil and gas. Their biggest controversies in oil and gas in our state since the discovery of Prudhoe Bay and the original tax laws have been taking place now. Just this last week, 20 offices across the state were raided by the FBI. These were six legislators, top legislators in Alaska, including the office of Ben Stevens, the president of our Alaska State Senate. And I want to talk about all this because this corruption, it's like a teapot dome is brewing in Alaska. That was the last major national oil scandal in the 1920s that brought down the last Republican administration in that era. A lot of their collapse was over oil and gas. It's funny that today, again, here we are, oil and gas, major issues, corruption issues emerging all over the map, and energy policy being right square in the center of this administration and the corruption scandals you're hearing about on the national level. Stevens Sr., Ted Stevens, has also been in the news in the last couple of weeks because it turns out he's the guy trying to block access to the federal budget online. You know, the federal budget, this trillion-dollar ticket that all of us are punching every week when we get our money taken out of our paychecks, we don't have a right to go in there and dig around and see how our money's being spent because Senator Stevens is blocking the legislation and finally got tagged for it. And the reason he tried to block that legislation is because every pork barrel piece of spending will be identified readily and easily by the public so we can start raising heck about this stuff and making sure that our money is spent and accountable. And government accountability, not having a database that manages the federal budget that we can look into and see how our money is being spent. And the biggest expenditure spending country in the world in terms of government, and we can't even look and see in the 21st century, it's ridiculous. It is totally, absolutely ridiculous. Stevens has tried to block it because then he can't build bridges to nowhere. And these bridges are, in fact, to nowhere, are unnecessary, and lack the logic of good planning. We're building bridges in faulted, heavily, heavily faulted earthquake zones. They want to spend $500 million, which is their preliminary estimates, and given the history of government spending here in Alaska on these kinds of projects, you can expect that bill to triple. Now, definitely, Alaska needs infrastructure. There's no question about it. We have less road mileage in Alaska, in our whole state, than you do in Seattle, you know, in the area of surrounding Seattle, Washington, as an example. And so, yeah, there's need here. There's a great deal of need to open Alaska up with corridors, but a bridge at that price negates perhaps hundreds of miles of road construction or rail construction, even better, that is needed in this region of the world. When you go back to the oil and gas issues, and here in Alaska what has happened is oil and gas became a major deal right after this governor got elected. In his primary, he ran a three-way primary. In that primary, his clock was cleaned by a woman, Sarah Palin. And Sarah Palin was this dark horse candidate. She was outspent by her opponents 4-6-1. But she had something that none of them had, and it was the integrity to stand against the oil industry. She had been part of the current governor's administration. She was one of the commissioners on oil and gas, was being paid $130,000 a year as an oil and gas commissioner, and resigned her position to report on her boss, who was hit with the largest ethics fine in the state's history, a guy named Rudrich, and had to resign his post. Well, Sarah Palin was forbidden by the rules from being able to talk about all of the ethical implications of this, but gave up a $130,000 job to do it. And I know Sarah, and she didn't have those kind of resources to walk away, but integrity ruled. She walked away. She's a Republican nominee now for the governor's position in Alaska, based on oil and gas and doing the right thing, taking an ethical stand, and doing something that very few politicians anywhere in the country have the guts to do. And then to watch her win and the public respond is a signal for all of us across the country that we can raise up good leadership, that we can bring good leadership that will stand in the face of the establishment that has worked against us and change this country. We're coming up on the break again. This is Dr. Nick Begich. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Call in at 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443, and join this conversation right after the break. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, and we're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Today we're talking about oil and gas and what's happening behind the scenes in this world of corruption, quite frankly. In fact, today's headline in the Anchorage Daily News, it says, VECO political pockets run deep. You know, they raided these 20 offices, president of the Senate, former Speaker of the House here in the state legislature. They raided them, and they, you know, one of the items they were looking for, this is really interesting, is a bunch of these guys got a bunch of baseball caps made up that on the inside they say Corrupt Bastards Club. Excuse me, but that's what it says. That's how it reports in the news. They actually put it on their hats, their level of corruption. FBI is even looking for the hats. I mean, they even identify themselves. Well, VECO is one of the biggest political players here. Their officers have given over $500,000 to political campaigns in Alaska. The other thing they've done is a lot of what they call consulting contracts to legislators. You know, this is where they pay them a few hundred thousand a year to do nothing. In fact, they won't even show what the guys are doing for this so-called consulting money, but every piece of legislation they care about seems to pass without any problem. They sit in the gallery of our state legislature passing notes to legislators while they're voting on bills to influence those votes. That's what's going on in Alaska, to set oil policy that will affect this entire country. And I am glad the FBI finally kicked their door in. Senator Stevens, the week before, was complaining, U.S. Senator Stevens, because he didn't get to weigh in on who the next U.S. district attorney would be to represent the litigation of the federal government here in Alaska. He wanted to once again influence that appointment. This time he didn't, and this time his son's door was kicked in. You know, this guy, Stevens, here in the state legislature, Ben was supposed to be running again this year, but the polls were so bad and he was in the middle of a recall for the remainder of his term, he didn't even file for re-election. But the stuff that came out, he's never reported where his money comes from in terms of all of the money. He got caught doing that. He had $70,000 a year in deferred income from an oil and gas company he forgot to mention on public disclosure statements. He's negotiating deals for fisheries in Southwest Alaska, the biggest fishery in the world. His dad federally is funding legislation to provide money for that fishery. He's serving on a board both managing a fishery and on a board negotiating a contract with that other company and failed to disclose any of those conflicts of interest. Corruption to the core over oil and gas, minerals, and fishing. And we in Alaska are the big treasury for this country right now. And it's being hijacked by multinational companies who have bought our legislature for the nickel on the dollar. What's gone on here in Alaska? We've been talking about it on this program since I first came on in May. And finally, we're starting to see some action up here where they're shaking up the powers that be and shaking out the people who have robbed us here in Alaska and the rest of the country. When you look at what's going on politically, exposure and transparency is the critical element right now. We need to see who's influencing legislation, who's blocking and supporting legislation, And there's no reason in the 21st century that we don't have that kind of visibility. I spent my life as a researcher. I can uncover just about anything in the unclassified world, but we can't make heads or tails out of the biggest budget in the world without a significant amount of manual work that could be eliminated. Not only will we be more efficient, but other organizations that monitor the federal budget will be much more able to report on how money is being spent and how it's being used or misused. You know, when you look again at sort of the budget pork issues, I think Americans are pretty tired of it. You know, I mean, Alaska's been a beneficiary, but I can't deny that one bit. Senator Stevens, as the ranking Republican in the U.S. Senate, and his colleague on the Democratic side, Byrd, and they trade off. You know, when the Senate changes hands from Democrats to Republicans, the guys at the stop, at the very top, still shake hands an awful lot because they help each other. They help each other when the other guy's in charge and make sure they get their pork barreled back to their home districts. This country is more than a barrel of pork. It's more than that. We need a comprehensive, cohesive set of public policies, particularly in energy, that address the real needs of this country in terms of our security, in terms of our national security. You know, here we are in the biggest oil producing region of the world. Alaska natives in rural Alaska pay probably double what anyone else pays for fuel in the country because you got to fly it in. And you know, in our paper today, again, Venezuela is offering assistance to native Alaskans so they can heat their homes this winter. What in the heck is Venezuela doing providing that in our country? And why isn't our country looking at the problem and addressing it aggressively and progressively and not letting some dictator from South America come up here and manipulate, and in the Northeast and other places? But what do you do when you don't have fuel oil at a reasonable price? You've got to solve the problem. We've got to find those solutions. This country is big enough and powerful enough and capable and innovative enough to do all of that. But we lack the leadership, and it is this old guard, this old leadership of corruption that needs to crumble at our feet. We're the public. We need to take control. This is our government. We need to take it back. You're on a break now with Republic Broadcasting Network, and this is Dr. Nick Begich, changing the way we see the world. Give us a call at 800-313-9443. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time. Thanks for tuning in. We've got Paul holding in Delaware. Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You had something you wanted to add to this conversation?
Actually, I had a question for you.
Sure.
I called in before, and I had first I'd like to give a plug for my MySpace account, because I've got some really powerful information there, and that is myspace.com/awakenfree, AwakenFree. Now, I had a conversation with you probably about a month ago regarding whether man has walked on the moon or not, and I never did get a clear response, and that is, it's been 38 years later, and they're talking about water on the moon. Well, go back and get it. Also, a Hubble telescope that can see 400,000 light years away, like we're ever going to need to go that far, if we ever make it that far, which is doesn't seem to be possible. But yet we can't take that same Hubble telescope and see the cameras, the many flags left, the dune buggies left, all these different things. And I've did my homework, and all this stuff about we're able to have lasers that bounce off the moon And Austin, Texas, it's ridiculous, because the man's name is James Wyatt, and I've seen him on a documentary, on History Channel, and he said, oh, no one has ever challenged me. No one has come out here. Well, I called him up, and I actually got the man to admit there's no way to prove that the laser is actually hitting off anything. And so what I figured out is we've got a bunch of cult members that run around thinking that man has stepped on the moon. And even though it's 38 years later,
yeah,
and they took six missions to the moon that went pretty much flawless, except for Apollo 13, which, by the way, was another drama, a suspenseful thriller. Are they going to make it back? And so, oh, it's dangerous. Let's not try it again. And so, therefore, that's how they got the public away from pushing this ridiculous Hollywood movie of going to the moon. But they so-called made 6 trips flawlessly, but yet they can't even do 6 space shuttle missions without them blowing up on them. And so every way you look at this thing, which I have, it's just a total bunch of cult members that will not come out of the denial that man has never went to the moon. He's never stepped foot on it, and so I would like your response, because last time I think I was talking to you, it was like man has went. So
this is my take on this, and I appreciate the call. You know, the issue of these issues of did we or didn't we? You know, many
we didn't. We didn't. Let's get that straight.
And here's my position. Is I don't have that data that proves it one way or the other. So. My position is always
that you're not looking hard enough, then, Doc. You're not looking hard
enough. It's not my issue, Paul. I mean, it's an important issue for some people, but if I spent my life researching that issue, is it going to change anything? Because the root of the problem is the same problem with government generally. It's lack of accountability.
If we have
these concerns, then we need to pursue them aggressively, and it sounds like you are. You've got a website with some of that data on it. I'm sure listeners will take a look at that. And in the long run, I hope we need to know, Doc. On all these issues, I agree with you. We need to find the truth. And that is the mission of this program and the mission of this entire network is to dig that truth out. You know, and not everyone can follow every issue. You know, there's a lot of issues out there. This is not one that I've been following. As data presents itself, I'll certainly look at it. I always do. You know, and I think that's why there's so many out there that are doing activist work right now. I mean, your interest in that particular issue, peel away that onion. You know, find those facts and get that information up there on your site. Make it available to us. Shoot me an email and remind me of where that data is, and I'll take a good hard look at it, Paul. And I appreciate your call. You know, getting back to the issue of the day, you know, getting back to the oil and gas issue that we started with, I want to go back to sort of the history of what's happened here and a couple of other issues that tie into this. When you think of the oil and gas issues generally in the country, I mean, look at the profitability of oil and gas. I mean, as the companies go, they're the most profitable in the country right now, certainly sitting on huge, huge cash reserves. And they pump pennies on the dollar, in fact, less than pennies on the dollar into their political programs. But their political programs are what dictates the outcome. And what the last caller was really getting to, it's not just about the moon mission. It's about the idea that we have to question. We're always questioning the integrity of our government. What is wrong with that picture? Ladies and gentlemen, we should not be in that position. Sure, we should be vigilant, we should be diligent, and we should peel that onion away and find that truth. But it shouldn't be so darn hard. Our government should be transparent as possible so we can look in and sort out what's what. It's the same thing when you look at the budgets, the fact that they hide what the budgets are doing because they don't really want us to know. I mean, we have a patchwork quilt of public policy that when you hold it up, it looks pretty, you know, if Grandma had made it, but it doesn't look pretty when our Congress has made it because none of the fabric lines up. None of it is contiguous enough to give us a comprehensive public policy based on, first, public disclosure and accountability, and secondly, the integrity and values that underlie that kind of accountability, and below that, the American public that projects those values. Whether we be conservative or liberals, we still understand those basic liberties, or we should. And if we don't, we need to be reminded, because government springs from us. It shouldn't be set up to press us down, which is what's been happening. Oil and gas, energy as a component of our economy, is what's driving inflation right now. It's what's driving the price of precious metals up. It's what's going to bust our stock market once the elections are over and the Christmas rush is finished and people have a chance to recover from the hangover. The reality is these issues of oil and gas are going to kill people this winter because we don't have anything in place to help those within our elderly populations and our severely disadvantaged populations that are going to need heating oil this winter and need that power taken care of. Because the federal government isn't doing anything about it, state governments and local governments will have to pick up the slack. Meanwhile, we're supporting industries that certainly don't need any support. They need to be paying part of the bill and take a position as companies that have been given the privilege, the absolute privilege and protection of the U.S. government internationally, including in Iraq right now, to continue to make their money and make their profits. And it's time for them to put a little bit of that back into the country that allowed that to happen in the first place. The fact is, instead of doing this, they're spending their money on buying legislatures in oil-producing regions to manipulate public policy for Wall Street instead of Main Street, and that has to change. When you look at what's happened here, BECO, one of the big oil and gas providers, this company was bankrupt in the 80s. They didn't have anything going for them, but they became the shill for the oil industry here, where they became their mouthpiece. They pumped a lot of money into political races. They even bought one of the only two newspapers in Anchorage, the Times, which was a Republican conservative paper. And they had, we had this great thing going in Anchorage. We had a liberal paper and a conservative paper, so we got both views and a lot of lively debate. Well, the VECO Times went out of business. They couldn't stay in business. They went out, but they got a deal with the Daily News. The Anchorage Daily News gave them a column in the editorial section, guaranteed basically ad infinitum forever. And they get to say whatever they want. Well, they've used it. It's called the VECO Times is the joke here, because this company, it was basically their propaganda sheet for the public. Now they've been caught. They've been caught influencing unduly outcomes in our legislature, and it is just the beginning. What will come out, we're certain, will be indictments. There will be a huge price to pay for what's happened here if it doesn't get crushed by very powerful people in Washington. But the fact is, the doors have been kicked open. The information's starting to flow out. If you go to websites and start to see what's brewing up here, this is going to change the shape of things. You know, there's a big gas line being planned here. People are out of natural gas at a decent price in the lower 48 states. We have enough natural gas in Alaska to solve that problem, and the issue is a pipeline. The oil industry has tied that gas up. They've known about it. They've had it. They've tied it up since 1977, when they turned the gas line or the oil line on here. They didn't build a parallel gas line, although they already have a right-of-way to do it. Liquefaction plants could be built at the same time. If they build a pipeline through Alaska on the existing corridor, it'll be, number one, environmentally sane, because it's already in a corridor that's monitored. You don't have to duplicate anything. You've got an infrastructure that supports it. You've got right-of-ways done. You've got surveys that have been done. You can bring that pipeline in 3 to 4 years faster than a Canadian line and have that gas hitting the West Coast pipelines and feeding the rest of the country much, much quicker than waiting for an all-Canadian route. And why do they want an all-Canadian route? They're saying, oh, we need to dump the gas in the Midwest where it's needed. Wrong. What it is those same oil companies own major oil interests and gas interests in Canada, and they have an interest in making money on that, too. And in the long run, it serves corporate interests, not American interests, that an all-Canadian gas line be built. More importantly, they're asking you and me to underwrite it by federal guarantees in terms of the price, and they're saying it's only going to cost $20 billion. Well, the Alaska pipeline, they estimated at $550 million, and it cost $9 billion. And if we know about building pipelines, and we do know about building pipelines in the Arctic and Alaska, you're never going to be right on your cost estimates. You can inflate those at least 2 or 3 times just to account for the conditions that you're going to be dealing with when you're building in the Arctic. And it's a totally different type of construction here in this region of the world. The fact is, right now in our legislature, they're fighting over the oil and gas issues. They were called into special session twice. We're headed in the third time. And when this corruption scandal broke last week, all bets were off and no one's having any special sessions, because we got to know who the players are yet and who's going to jail and who's staying out of jail before we decide who makes our law in this state. But the reality is, what we do here in Alaska right now is going to have an impact on energy policy nationally for the next several decades. And this is critically important, because Alaska holds the largest oil and gas reserves left in the country. Not only that, but we hold other energy resources here that are non-petroleum based that should be put into production. And there is no discussion, virtually no discussion, on this at this point in time. And yet we're seeing in small ways, like here in Alaska, one of the issues that came up was, well, you ought to be using geothermal. Well, a guy who owns geothermal rights up near Fort Yukon, which is above the Arctic Circle, has actually done exactly that. Heats his whole operation using geothermal, runs his energy using geothermal, runs his greenhouses year-round using geothermal. This is in the Arctic, ladies and gentlemen, growing fresh produce for virtually less than you can grow it on a farm in the Midwest with absolute controlled situation and essentially free energy. We have a 2,000-mile-long chain of islands in Alaska called the Aleutian Chain that is nothing but a big, giant geothermal pump sitting right along the Arctic Trench. There's a video we produced on this a while back. It's called Earth Changes, Alaska Sounds the Alarm, and it covers the oil and gas issues that we're talking about today and also covers the alternatives that are being missed. It focuses on Alaska and the world in terms of our energy resources. And you can find information on that at my website at earthpulse.com, earthpulse.com. And there you'll see quite a bit on oil and gas and other related technology issues. Earth Changes is an important video on this material that we're covering today. And again, I want to give the call-in number for today's program. It's 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. If you want to get in on this conversation. You know, again, going back to this gas issue, you know, we're talking about natural gas, the stuff that heats your homes and runs many power plants. The pipeline projections, you know, there was a time a few years back, and many might remember this, when Atlantic Richfield, one of the largest holders of oil and gas resources on the North Slope, wanted to sell to British Petroleum. And that would make British Petroleum a foreign-based company. It would actually own over 80% of the oil and gas on the North Slope had that happened. Well, I was pretty upset about it because it looked to me like a foreign national monopoly taking place on domestic oil. And a few others felt the same way. And the head of the Republican Moderate Party, Ray Metcalf, and the former former leader in the Democratic Party and one of the signers to our state constitution, Vic Fisher, and myself as a member of the Alaska Independence Party, we filed the first antitrust suit against ARCO to block that sale. Later, the western states, Washington, Oregon, and California, filed similar suits, and we stepped out. But what happened in that is BP didn't get to buy all of that. If they had, they'd be running the whole show right now, and it'd all be shut down. Instead, ConocoPhillips had to buy it, and that kept the monopoly from forming. Our position, my position on it, was a white paper I produced that suggested that Alaska by ARCO. Alaska at the time had $26 billion in liquid assets in the bank. I estimated ARCO could be bought for $8 billion. It actually sold for $7.9. Had Alaska bought ARCO and divested itself of all of the foreign assets, it would have paid it off, probably, very close to it. But what Alaska would have had is 52% of the gas, 33% of the oil, and 22% of the pipeline that transports that oil. And Alaskans right now would be receiving, we have a permanent fund, and I'll explain that after the break, but we have a permanent fund that pays Alaskans every year. We don't have a state income tax here. We don't have a state sales tax here. We don't have a state property tax here. And we don't have a state corporate tax here until your corporation nets over a quarter of $1 million a year. And the reason is we make our money in Alaska on our resources, which are held in the public trust. They're owned by all of us, and we lease them to these oil companies as our tenants, and they pay us fees. And those fees go into a huge account. 25% of all that money goes into this account that now is over $30 billion, and it produces revenues that are divided amongst the population every year. And so we get a check. Right now, it's about $1,000, $1,100 coming in October. And, you know, that's for every man, woman, and child that's been here for a year. And the fact of the matter is it would be over $10,000 apiece per year had we executed the recommendations that we made to our legislature a few years ago. And our state treasury would be busting. We would be having trouble figuring out how to spend the money, and we didn't do it. We missed the opportunity to do it. But what we've got now is an oil and gas tax debate taking place in Alaska That looks great when you're looking at $70 a barrel oil, but oil swings, and the swings are huge. As the alternatives come in, the swings are even going to be bigger. The fact is, we're all being sold out, and we're being sold out to multinational companies that could give a rip about what happened to the rest of us in this country. You're listening to RBN Live. This is Dr. Nick Begich, and we're talking about oil and gas. Call in at 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443, and get in this conversation. We'll be right back right after the break. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, and we're here again every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. And today's subject is oil and gas. Again, the call-in number, if you want to get in on the conversation, is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. Just before the break, I was starting to talk about this permanent fund, and I want to get into this a little bit because this is really a very unique institution. It was set up by one of our Republican governors, Jay Hammond, who passed away this last year. One of the statesmen that everybody, I don't care what party you're from in Alaska, people knew Jay Hammond as not only a man of integrity, but a man really representing the people here. And early in the oil and gas experience back in the late 70s, he began to realize that this money was just going to be squandered by legislatures, both the one that was operating then and the ones that would likely come in following years. And he pushed an issue, and actually it ended up in a constitutional issue, where 25% of all rents and royalties derived by the state from oil and gas would go into what's called our permanent fund. And this fund would be invested primarily in stocks, real estate, bonds, and investments, and would be managed by a non-politically appointed board. And it's existed now since the 70s. It has had some of the highest earnings for a fund of its size of any fund in the world, and has resulted in an amount of earnings every year. And what they do is they take a five-year average of those earnings, and they cut it in half, and they have a floating five-year average. And every year they take half of that interest earnings and give it away in a check to everybody who lives here. That's huge. The highest it's been is up to $2,000. And the lowest it was around $600. But it's a lot of money. You know, if parents put that away for their kids every year from the time they're born until they reach 18, you know, their college is fully paid for. You can even put a check off so you get tuition paid guaranteed at the University of Alaska for your four-year degree. You know, there's a lot of things in oil and gas, and we got to remember all of these underlying resources belong to the people, and we have to get our maximum benefit for them and from them. That's our charge within our constitution here in Alaska, and we don't always do it, and that's what needs to change. I've got Gerald holding in Texas, another oil state. Gerald, are you still with me? Hello, Gerald.
Hello, can you still hear me?
I can indeed. You're on with Dr. Nick. What's on your mind today?
Well, before the break, you were mentioning the large swing in the price of oil, and we've seen that in Texas over the years from the 80s forward.
Right.
And now there's a big oil discovery in the Gulf, and it's deep oil, and being deep oil, it's consistent with the abiotic oil theory. Do you have any thoughts on the abiotic oil theory?
You know, this is the idea that it's a different source than a bunch of old dead dinosaurs. You know, that it's actually carbon within the earth that comes up from very, very deep within the earth in the form of oil and gas. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people on this subject, and, you know, it seems to me that it's gaining a lot of momentum. In fact, the evidence is starting to increasingly indicate that perhaps there's more to oil and gas formation than we ever suspected. You know, it reminds me of the debates in the 60s of continental drift. You know, everybody laughed about that. They said, oh, that's ridiculous. That doesn't happen. But here we are today, and we know it's the fact. Stay with me, Gerald. We're going to the top of the hour break, and we'll be back. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, and you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich with Changing the Way We See the World. And we'll be right back after the top of the hour. Hang in there, Gerald. Welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we have Gerald on the line. Gerald, if you wanted to go ahead and add into that, what we're talking about is this deep, deep oil, this alternative potential source of oil. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, when you start to look at it, and again, with you know, with science, science is a strange thing. You know, it almost takes 50 years for old paradigms to kind of fall away. And I've decided that it correlates with people's doctoral dissertations where they get all hung up on the wisdom they think they have and only to find that it's replaced about every 50 years with a greater wisdom or a greater knowledge. And I think oil and gas may very well fit into that frame. You know, there may be a lot more on the supply side than people ever anticipated. The press report showing this major find in the Gulf indicated that U.S. reserves were 29 billion barrels, and that's ridiculous because when they were fighting, when the industry was fighting to keep Alaska from getting locked up, 10 times that amount was being reported as potential reserves here in Alaska, 290 billion barrels. So, you know, I mean, where's the source? That's a big issue, and I think maybe, Gerald, you want to add in some more on that and what you're seeing in that down in Texas?
Sure. What I'm looking for, I have the Mind Java Research Station here in Texas, and I study plant life, animal life, and phenomenal biocommunication. One thing I'm thinking about doing now, taking on this research project, would be comparing some of this deep oil to oil that comes from people from areas that people consider to be fossil regions, Pennsylvania, places like that. There should be a difference in the patterns of energy that come off of it if it had life at one time compared to if it's just a hydrocarbon that bubbled up.
That's great. You know, biophysics can yield a lot, and it sounds like that's the field that you're involved in. You know, and in being able to profile oil and gas, you know, every bit of oil and gas, no matter where it's produced, has a unique signature to it, and that signature is based on its chemical composition. But also, if you look deeper than that, the energy emanations would yield certain information as well. In fact, maybe more information. And then the question is, if you've got biological material at one time in it, was it in it in its formation or was it in it after the fact as it migrated up to the surface? And this type of analysis might actually answer some of that.
It might. You just posed a good and interesting concept. Was it added later or did it come when the oil was formed? That could confound what I'm doing or what I'm studying. I'm glad you thought of that. I hadn't thought of it yet. You just brought this whole idea to mind in your show today.
Well, I appreciate that. That's what this is all about. You know, here's something else I notice in this in science is the cross-fertilization that doesn't take place. You know, there's so much good science out there with really excellent people doing it, but they don't talk to each other because they're out of each other's discipline. And it's the model we set up during the Cold War, which was this idea of compartmentalization and specialization. The Soviet model was the opposite because the only way they could keep up with us was cross-fertilization in the disciplines because it's very expensive to run compartmentalized science because when you discover mistakes, you're usually way, way out in front of your solution. And this cross-fertilization, I was just in Texas for business with the Lay Institute on Technology where I serve as executive director and I also serve on the board. And this very issue of cross-fertilization has become very important to us because we believe the solutions for these big problems are going to require that. And so the Institute is actually setting up a meeting of 8 to 10 experts in biophysics and physics to begin to address some of these major problems that we're discussing on this show and other programs I've been on all across the world. And I've met some of the absolute finest scientists. We're going to get a bunch of them together that have an interest and not continuing to work in government projects, but take their science, if it can be properly funded, and do something really, really good. Hang in with me, Gerald. We're on a short break, and we'll be right back. And let's continue this conversation, and maybe we'll find something else that we can add to the research that's going on. This is Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World on RBN Live, Republic Broadcasting Network. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and we have Gerald still holding on the line. Gerald, do you want to add something else to this conversation today?
Yes. You had mentioned earlier that I might be interested or involved in biophysics. Actually,
yeah.
It's more electrophysiology.
Oh, interesting.
Right. I come from a background of neuroscience, computer science, and cognitive science, and tied that in with some electrical engineering. And I'm just looking at the electrical signatures or auras of things around me and finding some very interesting things.
Well, there's a couple of papers I want to point you to. One of them is a website, and it's a website in the Soviet Union. And it's actually by the former head of the biophysics department of the USSR Academy of Science. And if you look up the name Alexander, and I'm going to spell this for you, K-A-I-V-A-R-A-I-N-E-N, Kavaranen is how you say this. Alex spent 6 weeks with me here in my home in Alaska. He was a former director of the biophysics lab for the USSR Academy of Sciences for 10 years before the country collapsed. He is a visiting professor in 5 U.S. universities as well as a number of European universities. I encourage people with your science background to take a look at his site, particularly if you have a background in electrophysiology and physics. And what you'll find there are the keys to the castle. There is tremendous amount of knowledge within his database on how all of this works with the underlying math. And there's probably only a handful of people in the world that can discern and decipher what this man is trying to say. He's one of the experts that we're going to be bringing into a conference, a closed conference, to take on big ideas, big solutions, and try and put together the right building blocks for those solutions. So as we get into more of that, I'll start to disclose who all's involved and what we're doing. But at this point, it's a closed conference mainly to give people the intellectual latitude to say what they want and to begin to present perhaps some of the bigger solutions to some of the bigger problems. And we're going to try and network those individuals with the right teams of other scientists, researchers, and resources to maybe see some really good science developed in the public's interest for a change instead of in the interest of corporations and an industrial academic complex that is overwhelmed in terms of the research in a way that no longer, in many cases, is well-directed. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of good science. There's a lot of good people doing a lot of good work. But some of those big issues that either can be used for weapons development or enhancing the human being and the human being's performance, those are the issues right now. You say you're involved in electrophysiology, then you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sure, and there are a lot of people out here just spinning their wheels because you have people with doctorates and evolutionary psychology and other useless dead-end disciplines, and they're trying to promote their old patterns. So you really hit it on the head with that. You know, people do tend to fade away with time. But look at Darwin. People are still going after his theory and worshiping it. I'd like to see more and more good science, and I really appreciate the work you're doing. Thank you for that tip. I'll have a look at that website.
All right. Thanks, Gerald. I appreciate it. You know, the whole idea of making change and seeing changes take place is what, to me, is exciting. And, you know, when you look at what's happening and you begin to look deeper into what's happening, you recognize that the science of today was the science fiction of 50 years ago. And that's how science evolves and how science does indeed change. You know, a book we've recently released called Controlling the Human Mind, The Technologies of Political Control or Tools for Peak Performance. This came out about 10 days ago. We started shipping this book. I've been interviewed by the Washington Post on this book. We're hoping to see an article, a credible article on this subject, come out in the coming months. And I can tell you the reporter following that issue after reading this material, because there's over 300 sources cited here that show how this technology has evolved, are willing to take the issue on and bring it to the public. You know, the whole area of biophysics is one that is exploding, and we're going to be talking more about that in upcoming programs. I still got another caller holding. I've got Jeff in Massachusetts. Jeff, are you still hanging in there with me?
Oh, yes. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What's on your mind today?
Oh, yes. I love what you said about compartmentalization, and you're right. The Soviets don't do that because they know that when you put a whole bunch of minds together of very different disciplines, you're going to get a solution because people look at problems from different angles and from different approaches. And the reason why we're so compartmentalized is because our fascist government wants to hold the keys to everything.
Absolutely.
And deprive the average person of that kind of technology.
Absolutely.
That's what it is. We're more fascist than the Russians.
Absolutely. You know, Jeff, you bring up a very important point about the withholding of knowledge. You know, science, if you look at science, it's really a religion. You know, what does religion mean when you look at the root words? they come from roots that mean to regulate belief. And if you think about religion, that's what religion does. It regulates our belief systems within a certain box, whether we're Christian, Muslim, Jews, or Hindus, or Buddhists, or whatever we are. We exist in that box. And when you start to think about all of that, what has each of these religions done over the time? They talk about all of our potentials as human beings, but they kind of withhold that knowledge that might actually unlock some of that potential. Just the opposite of what I think religion was intended to do. It was supposed to encourage and bring out and reclaim all of these attributes of human beings that we've forgotten or lost sight of over the years. And I think this is, again, when you look at all of the technologies and how technologies have evolved, it's about suppression. Now you have high science, the idea of controlling the human mind. Here's what we found, is that you can enhance human brain performance dramatically through very, very simple things. And as you do, your capacity to resolve problems increase. In other words, you think about that old story about people, the blind guy going up to feel the elephant, and one guy describes it like a snake because he's feeling the tail, and one guy's holding the trunk, and one guy's holding the side. I look at that elephant, and you have all these specialists in science, and depending on where you stand, you surround that elephant, and everybody describes what they see. No one's going to see the same thing, yet we're looking at the same elephant. What we need to do is learn how to rotate the elephant. Don't ask the scientists to change their stripes. Get that elephant rotating, and the way you do it is bring the right people in the room so the whole picture of the elephant is held by those participants. Then you solve big problems. And that analogy I actually used, the first science paper I ever developed and delivered in my life, was done in 1978 at a conference, and my topic was compartmentalization versus cross-fertilization. And I contrasted the United States method of looking at research by compartmentalization to the effectiveness of a broader approach of cross-fertilization. And that was 1978. I was 19 years old delivering that paper. And, it was in the middle of the Cold War, and it was obvious to me as a 19-year-old how the Soviets could keep up. But more importantly, in the area of health and electrophysiology, their restrictions were 1,000 times more stringent than ours because of what they had discovered through that cross-fertilization. In fact, even in the areas that we're talking today, oil and gas and energy development, all of their sciences were developed in that way. And Russia now is becoming one of the leading oil producers and will be, I'm telling you, it will be one of the top producers within the next few years, because if you look at the Arctic Ocean, it is a big, giant oil basin, thing, and it's shallow.
Well, let me throw this out, because I'm going to hit this from a security angle, which is the science that's being promoted today is surveillance technology. I mean, if you're watching the movie No Escape with Ray Liotta, and you ever watch the futuristic action flicks that are out today, the science is surveillance.
Absolutely.
Miniature cameras with microphones on it. And if you read Bearden's book, America at the Brink, and books before that, basically the gist of Tesla technology is being able to perform surveillance-style operations and beyond that in some of Bearden's older works.
Right.
Now, I believe what's going to happen is only the elite will have the technology and everybody else will be getting screwed royally. And America will be living under third world status, and the science will be the science of death, to where enemies will be taken to camps, killed, and have their organs removed, just like communist China or in a third world country like Brazil or some other backwards country.
Well, Jeff, I think you're not too far off the mark. There's a couple of companies that I've been looking into recently when you talk about misuse of Tesla technology, and I've had a very long conversation over the weekend with one of the physicists for a company that actually wants to introduce Tesla's old ideas on energy transmission and communications transmission. And I read the papers that are posted on the web, and then he sent me papers that aren't posted on the web that were part of presentation made to the Pentagon, and I can tell you, if this thing goes through, it will change everything, because Tesla's systems didn't just have the opportunity to solve a lot of these big problems, but they also present an opportunity to carry a signal that would be very, very destructive, perhaps, to each of us. And these are the technologies of political control. And that phrase isn't mine. That phrase comes from the European Parliament as it began to assess non-lethal weapons and weapons systems being developed that intrude upon personal privacy. If you look at my earlier books, Earth Rising and Earth Rising 2, these two books get into the privacy issue with over 1,000 source documents showing how that privacy has been dismantled from the late 90s to where we are today. Most of the stuff that we were reporting in 2000 in the book Earth Rising is just now making it into the mainstream, and we had the citations way back then. Hold on, Jeff. We're going to a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to RBN Live, the Republic Broadcasting Network, and this is Dr. Nick Begich with Changing the Way We See the World. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So pass that on to your friends if you find this show interesting. We're going to be bringing in other guests in future programs next week. I'm going to bring in someone to talk about dome homes, above-ground dome homes, based on their energy implications, wind shear for those who live in hurricane regions. But a very interesting guy, a good friend of mine I've known for over 10 years, has been involved in monolithic domes. So I want to bring that up next week. And I'm trying to reach another guy, an expert in underground homes, which is sort of the opposite end of the spectrum. But again, for energy efficiencies, I want to bring both those guys on, talk about what goes on above ground and below ground, and see what we can do to educate the public on other construction methods that are these days very economical, but save a fortune in energy because of the way these places are designed. So we'll be bringing those guys in, hopefully both of them, next week's program on Wednesday. The guy who just called, Gerald, you know, I just recognized his voice. He's the guy that I've talked to from time to time. Gerald has done some interesting work with consciousness. In fact, I want to point to him again, MindJava, MindJava. Take a look, see if you can find him on the internet. He's doing some interesting work. Really, it is biophysics. Electrophysiology is really within that group. You'll find him at mindjava.com. He's doing some interesting work with plants using Cleve Baxter's premise years ago that plants could actually register emotion and this kind of stuff. And he's done the research. He's done the homework, and it's quite interesting. In fact, Gerald sent me a small instrument that I could actually hook up to plants as I run experiments here in Alaska. I find it really interesting work. In fact, maybe I'll talk to Gerald. Gerald, if you're still listening, give me a call later in the week. Let's get you scheduled for another program, and maybe we'll put an hour of Gerald from Texas on the air talking about his work in life sciences, because I think it's very interesting work, and I know listeners will find that edge of technology an interesting one. Jeff, do I still have you there? I'm sorry I went off topic a little bit, but we've been doing that a lot this hour, which I think is okay, and I hope listeners are patient. You know, these subjects do interweave. They bring up other subjects that I think are important to cover, so if people are willing to be patient, I think we get a lot more information out that way.
Oh yes, and believe me, I love when people go off topic, because I consider myself a very open-minded individual. And speaking of going off topic, which is on topic, surveillance technology, I believe this is the Bush doctrine in essence, which is we turn the Middle East into Arizona. Have the women trade in their burkas for bikinis and have a McDonald's on every corner in every Middle Eastern country and completely neuter the Middle East completely and leave our borders open so more illegal aliens come in and then lowjack them with microchips so we can keep track of them. I mean,
none of that's inaccurate. I think it's actually dead on right. You know, when you go to the biggest issue for immigration, you know, that's part of the issue for forcing an implant technology. The other is the fact of positive ID because of the big the big crime, you know, is identity theft. You know what?
Yeah.
There's nobody going to jail for it hardly at all because they're not spending any money tracking these guys down. They're spending all the money whipping up fear in the country. So every one of our grandmothers is sitting around worrying about someone stealing their identity, and they're not prosecuting anyone. And that's what's going to lead to this sort of form of positive ID. We were reporting on implant technology showing up in military documents, including the Revolution in Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War, which you can see at the U.S. Army War College, and it's one of their publications. You know, they've talked about this for decades, and now they're implementing it. And it's all about control. It's about taking away personal liberty. It's about taking away the essence of who we are as human beings and treating us like cattle. And the thing that's going on in the Middle East, a lot of it is a clash of culture. You know, the Middle Easterners, because of their culture, they don't want a McDonald's on every corner. They don't want MTV on their television. They don't want what we consider valuable and important because their values aren't ours. And the fact of the matter is, we need to learn how to leave people alone. When they tread on us, I say stomp them into the ground, all right? I mean, when Afghanistan wouldn't give up, Osama bin Laden, and they're all claiming credit for blowing up a couple of our buildings, I say make them a crater, and that's exactly what we did. But when we jump in the middle of everyone's domestic affairs and expect them to be tolerant of that, we would not be tolerant of that, and we are not. When the Chinese come in and meddle in our government, or the Israelis, for that matter, who got caught spying on our government a few years back, or anyone else, we hold them to account. Yet we go all over the world, trample over people's governments as if we have the right to do so, introduce bits of culture that we think are so wonderful that people find objectionable and disgusting. And we can't rationalize it because our multinationals are deciding where the money is and where we're going to go hijack the next resource. And that is where our problems begin, is by interference with the right of self-determination. And every human being on this planet has that right. And we may not like what they self-determine, but unless it tramples on us, we should leave them alone. If it tramples on us, stomp them into the ground. But there is a balance between when we stomp people and when we don't. And we follow the balance that is out of balance. We need to take our government back and grab control, because the control belongs to every single citizen in this country. We're on the break. We'll be right back. We'll continue this discussion on oil and gas and the impacts of new technology. And you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And this program is every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time, right here on the station that you're dialed into, or if you're dialed in on the Internet. These programs are also archived, available for free at rbnlive.com. So remember that when you're telling folks about this program. I want to mention my website a couple of times. I want to mention, first of all, our research site, and our research is provided by the Lay Institute, in a Texas-based nonprofit, a 501c3. You can see the site at layinstitute.org, layinstitute.org for background on our research side. On our commercial side, we have www.earthpulse, E-A-R-T-H-P-U-L-S-E, earthpulse.com. And based on the discussions we're having today, I'd recommend people take a look at the website, earthpulse.com, and look under the sidebar called Empowerment. And there's a number of articles and essays that I've written over the years. One is called Free or Slaves, one is called Suppressing Religion, another one, East versus West in Evolving Economies. The fourth one, In Search of Truth, The Human Imperative. The fifth one, From Control to Power. The next one, Science and Power. And the last one, Change Agents and Reality Creation, which could have been called A Fistful of Quarters in a Phone Booth, because it tells people what we've done and what can be done as a committee of one. You know, people are always waiting for an organization to form and for someone to say, hey, this is what we need to do. And the reality is, the organization is already formed, and you're standing in it, and the leadership is already wearing your shoes. And all we need to do is step into those things that we know to be right and true and begin to act on them. Don't just talk about them. Do something about them. You know, this program is a catalyst. It's intended to stimulate thinking. It's intended to stimulate debate, and it's intended to change the direction in which our technologies will go, from making us slaves to making us free, to reaching our highest and best potentials as human beings, because the technology is here right now to accomplish that, and we are missing our opportunities. At a time when solutions are needed the most, human capacity is needed the most, we have done everything in this country to suppress it, and we need to move a different direction. I said earlier that every religion, every cult, every secret society has hidden bits of that knowledge over decades, over centuries, over millennia to deny us the right, our birthright as creative human beings. That's what we need to reclaim on every front, political, business, economics, religion, and in science. And more importantly in science, because science determines so much of what happens in the 21st century. Today, you look around the world, and the most powerful governments in the world are those that hold the highest and best technologies. Controlling technologies within a democratic republic like the one we used to have here and the one we need to reclaim in the United States will energize and propel us into a better 21st century. We don't have to know how to build this stuff any more than we could go out and build a modern automobile. But we can drive that automobile from place to place. We understand the concept, and that's what I'm talking about. The concepts need to be debated so that we can make sure the directions we go are the right ones. And in order for that to happen, we need greater transparency in our government. You know, in Europe, for over a decade that I've been traveling to Europe, and I've been over now 13 times, meeting political leaders, meeting the public, lecturing throughout the continent. And what I find are the same things that we are complaining about here. They're complaining about with their government. But the watchword in Europe for over a decade has been transparency, transparency, transparency. And that's the word that we need to echo on this continent, because our government has closed the door to the public. And the store is open for business, but government is not a business. And that's what people fail to realize. Yes, you can run it responsibly, but responsible government and responsible business are two different equations. And that's what we have missed. Government now reflects only big business and multinationals, because they're the ones with the access to the Congress, and we need to change it. And we're starting to see some bright lights appearing around this country in both major parties and in the other parties that exist. We need to look for those bright lights and get behind them, because we've seen it in Alaska, knocking out old political institutions right and left, because people are doing something about it. And it's just the little things, and there are no little things. All of it adds up to big solutions when people get engaged and people get excited about the possibility of seeing change. And I have not given up. This network has not given up. And there are millions of people around this country that are not giving up. And the fact is, the American Revolution started with 6%, thinking that was a good idea. According to some historians, we've got a lot more than 6% in this country asking this government to wake up. It's election season. Get involved. Get behind some of these people you believe in. Get active in their campaigns. And maybe, just maybe, we can take a little piece of this back and keep hacking it back till we have the full baloney again, and that baloney is shaken out of public life and replaced with the fiber that this country was based upon. Oil and gas, our biggest issue, is being ignored still by the mainstream media, yet this runs. We consume over 25, almost 30% of the world's energy, and yet it is what runs our economy. It is what drives so much of what we're doing. And when you see the roll-ups in local budgets, school districts, cities, on oil costs and the impact to each of us as our property taxes go up in those places where they have such things, we are in deep, deep trouble coming out of this next election cycle. And we need to begin to use our political power again. So maybe, just maybe, this election cycle yields us a little more creative and innovative leadership. When you talk about the old guard, it's crashing. Many of these old politicians are at an age now where their views of the world aren't going to matter because they're going away. And you know, there's a time for change, and that time for change is right now. And it depends upon what each of us do with the knowledge that we have and our spheres of influence, whether it's talking to our neighbors, calling our congressman. In fact, you can call the U.S. Congress toll-free. I'm going to give you a couple toll-free numbers to register your concerns with your congressman, and I encourage you to do it. And that number is 888-355-5555. 888-355-3588. Again, 888-355-3588. And another toll-free to the U.S. Congress is 800-450-8293. Again, 800-450-8293. And if you're interested in getting your country back, give your congressman or U.S. senator a call and ask them what they're doing on energy policy. What are they going to do for people in their homes this winter when they're freezing in the dark? Ask them what they're going to do to make sure the public's interests are projected into the Middle East and not just corporate interests that continue to crumble us into major, major conflicts. Those conflicts aren't going away in the short term. We're chasing terrorists that don't even have a state to call their own. They are a stateless organization drifting through the world as a shadow of what's going on. Those governments that are supporting them, we need to enter into the sanctions. We need to shut that down. But in terms of what we're doing in this country, we need to rebuild this country, not the Middle East. They have a right to self-determination. If they want a revolution in Iraq, they're entitled to it. If they stomp on our rights in the course of that, we're entitled to stomp back. But in the meantime, we need to rebuild, recapture, and reclaim our own territory on our own land within this country and build a country based on the values that this country started with, so these conflicts can be suppressed in an appropriate way through the kind of diplomacy that lends itself to the real values, the root values of this country. Oil and gas and the corruption at the top is where it starts and ends. The first administration of this president, they had this big energy review, this big energy policy about developed and all of this research going into it. They still withhold from the public. And look at what's going on with energy today after 6 years of this nonsense. The only people being enriched are those that have always been enriched at the expense of the public. And what is it? It's with, in the United States, public resources, oil and gas that belongs to us. And it's being sold for pennies on the dollar as fear is generated to just give it away. Here in Alaska, they're making oil developments royalty-free in some places. They don't even pay a penny to anyone for anything. They just take it. And this is the kind of legislation that works against each of us that doesn't build a national policy of energy independence. And just now, here at the 11th hour, 2 minutes till midnight, when the public is screaming, we're finally hearing them say, maybe we need an energy policy in the country. You know what? We've needed an energy policy since the embargo in the 70s, when Brazil picked up an energy policy that made them the largest country in South America energy independent. They're not waiting. They're already there. They're 33 years ahead of where we're at, and we're supposed to be this innovative industrial country. We need to recognize and provide the incentives for those alternatives to be kicked into reality. You know, we did that in the 70s. We provided incentives, tax credits, lots of things to stimulate the alternative. Why aren't they doing that now? The reason they're not doing it now is because those alternatives actually make more economic sense than oil and gas. The fact is they're cheaper. The fact is MIT just released the information 2 months ago. They can produce hydrogen at the same cost, making it available to the public in terms of energy output, at the same cost as gasoline. And they haven't even started that research yet. I mean, when you think about how much further that's going to go, the fact is energy costs could be brought down dramatically if we provided those incentives. But, where's the money flowing? You look at where the money goes. You look at how the money's collected. You look at who's making the money. And I can tell you this administration has made a major portion of their personal wealth on oil and gas. Dick Cheney, for those that forgot, if they read The New Yorker, you can remember it. Dick Cheney took a $20 million parting gift from Halliburton when he left their company. It was his severance pay. You know, what did he do for $20 million? That's what I want to know. It's the same question we're asking in our state legislature here on a much smaller scale when we're asking Ben Stevens, what did you do for over $200,000 for VECO, one of the biggest oil and gas service companies in Alaska? And he refuses to say because what he did was nothing, you know, nothing except pass their legislation and get their issues passed through our legislature so they would have even greater advantages. What do they need greater advantages for? Oil and gas are making more money than most countries in the world, the big oil and gas companies. They're entitled to good profits. I believe in capitalism. I believe in all that. but not corrupt capitalism. I don't believe in capitalism that violates the base American values that allowed those companies to form and be secure in this country for over 100 years. That's what they've betrayed, the very thing that allowed them to be in existence in the first place. One of the only places on the planet where they could have had the opportunities were because of what the American people have shed blood for all over the planet. And we don't need to be shedding blood for multinational corporations anymore. We need to recognize that that blood shed is our sons and daughters, and it ought to be based on a platform of American values. It ought to be based on a platform that all of us can endorse, regardless of our political outcomes, in terms of what our political persuasions are, because democracy within a democratic republic means that people have to be free, they have to be knowledgeable, they have to be educated, and they aren't the gladiators for the multinational institutions. They are our sons and our daughters. And when you look at what has happened, and these maintaining the power positions for pork barrel politics, those of us that are in states where we benefited from it need to reject that politics. We need to stand up and say, you know what? The bigger cause of the country is more important than our state's pork. And when we start telling our congressmen that, things will change. People can give a call. Give a call to Senator Stevens' office today and tell him what you think about public disclosure. Let me give you a toll-free number for the Congress today. It's 888-355-3588. Or you can try this other one, 800-450-8293. 800-450-8293. Call your congressman or call Senator Stevens' office from Alaska and say, end the corruption. Let's have some accountability in the federal budget. Let us know what's in there. Let's not let these guys get away with hiding behind the government and hiding behind the catchphrase national security when it's really personal security, because if we saw what they were doing, if our mothers saw what they were doing, they would be spanking their butts. Pardon me, but that's the way it would go, because none of these people will do in public what they do in secret, because they know none of us would stand for it. Transparency is what we need to ask for. Transparency is what we need to insist on. And we need more than corporate whistleblower programs developed by corporations. We need national whistleblower programs with teeth in them that allow people on major issues of public concern, whether it be corporate abuse or government abuse, we have to have a channel and a vehicle to allow the good people around this country that are working within these programs that have something to say, an outlet to say it in, so we can get through, break through those clouded rooms, those smoke-filled rooms, and find out what the truth is and get that truth to the public. Because once we know it, this government will change. Truth will set us free. This is about Truth Radio. You know, what we're doing here today, the chance of being able to even talk about these issues, is disappearing across the country as bigger and bigger conglomerates buy up the last of the independents. You need to support Republic Broadcasting Network, because it's the kind of network that allows us to have these discussions that might actually reflect the change. You know, this program is changing the way we see the world. We're hoping to stimulate that kind of debate, and I think that we have, you know, and I think we've got a lot more to do. You know, and it's more than just this program. We're talking to a lot of people now who are very, very interested in seeing us change things. And I think we can do it. We can all do it together. We can all do it alone. We can do it by acting on what we each know to be right and true. You know, that's the step of faith. You know, faith isn't some mystery that you have to wait around to figure out. Faith is knowing something in your head, understanding it in your heart, and stepping into it with your life. So you act on what you know. And when you make mistakes, you correct them quickly. But you act on what you know. And that's what we need to do. We don't need to do some big plan, some grandiose idea. The little things, the things that are right in front of us, are those that we need to act on. Talk to your neighbor. Call your congressman. Write a letter to the editor. Do those things that at least start to make an impact and a difference, because we can make a difference. You know, this idea of calling the Congress again, call them. The call doesn't cost you anything. You got to take 5 minutes out of your day. Don't send them an email. They don't even read them anymore. They just stack them up. Handwritten note. Put it on a postcard. Give them a phone call. Don't let them dominate the agenda. The public can dominate their agenda. Enough people call on any given issue, I guarantee it gets on their plate, because at the end of the day, they still got to win an election. And hopefully they don't take that away with the next bit of technology. You're listening to RBN Live. We're coming up on the last bit. Thanks for hanging in with us. We got another few minutes. We'll be right back after the break. And you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich, and we're changing the way we see the world. And welcome back to RBN Live, the Republic Broadcasting Network. You're listening to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and we're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and this 2 hours has evaporated pretty rapidly today once again. You know, I appreciate being on this program. It gives us an opportunity to really get into some of these issues, and, you know, we get off topic from time to time, but I think that's okay. We're covering a lot of ground, trying to integrate some of this science, some of the politics, and some of the economics, so it maybe makes a little more sense to all of us, and we can do something with it. The end of the day is always, sort of looking back on what's been happening through the week. And, you know, we've got heroes out there that we need to recognize. Hamill in Washington, D.C., one of the big whistleblowers on oil and gas. You know, he's finally maybe able to go to the beach if BP's oil and gas ombudsman does what it's supposed to do. But, you know, the idea of activists and individuals always having to carry this ball, we need to see bigger institutions built. Institutions that force accountability, that provide opportunities to disclose. Listening to RBN and providing that information is one of those. Take a look at our websites. All the articles and essays that are there are free. Copy them. Send them to people. Get them out there if you like those ideas. If you don't, argue back with us, and maybe we'll refine those ideas. You know, we don't have all the answers. In fact, we know. We absolutely know. We have very few of those answers. But we're willing to explore it. We're willing to get it on the air. If you have a bit of truth that you think needs to be on this program, shoot me an email and let me know. You know, our email is at the site. Go to EarthPulse, EarthPulse, EarthPulse.com. Shoot me an email, and we'll certainly consider the issues. We'll try and get them on the air with the experts if we can track them down. If you know experts, let us know about them. You know, we'll get them on there. We'll take those controversial issues on that nobody else wants to talk about, and we'll do it in a credible way. We'll cite the citations, we'll produce the data, and make it meaningful, hopefully meaningful, so we can see how that information can be used to change our own perceptions and then allow us to act on our new knowledge. And I think that's the essence of talk radio. It's to get the issues out, get people excited about the possibilities. We need to lift that depression, get rid of that fear. That doesn't come from any productive place, and replace it with knowledge. And in the basis of knowledge is real power. Well, we might be able, and I believe we can, indeed, make a change. Truth Radio is all about that. You know, this idea of being able to have an opportunity, express that viewpoint, and allow listeners to participate fully in their viewpoints. And we don't always agree with listeners, you know, but the fact is, we want those controversial issues discussed, and without them, nothing will change. You know, nothing springs from the status quo. No great change happens from the way things are. They happen by that few people seeing the world just a little bit differently. Changing the way we see the world is what this program is called, and hopefully we can stimulate a little bit of that in the coming months. I'm going to be bringing you some of my best in science. I'm going to be interviewing some interesting folks, mainly in October. We're kind of low on our travel schedule. I'm doing a lot of lectures around the country. You can find out about that on our website. But, you know, it's important, I think, to get the science community involved a little bit differently in the solution. So hopefully, in the coming weeks, we'll get some of those guys on. We'll have even more exciting conversation. Thanks for being with me today. You've been listening to Dr. Nick Begich, Changing the Way We See the World on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Talk to you all next week. Thanks for tuning in.